What's up, everybody? Happy Tuesday. It is Tuesday, March 5th. Today is the franchise tag deadline. This is the Pick Six podcast. Oh, wait, no. It's the Brady Quinn football show.
Yeah, we don't do that anymore.
I know.
We did away with that like a couple weeks ago now.
I was doing half-hearted lasers. That was the... I know.
Half-heartedly. You can't do them half-hearted. You just can't do them all together.
Right. Yeah, I mean, I think we've reached a good medium in terms of our laser shooting. We'll do it during the season, but you know, right now it doesn't warrant doing it. Besides, you have a small. I think I heard a small child. Are you podcasting with a small child?
I may or may not be podcasting with a small child. My daughter woke up a little before we thought she was going to, so she's also joining us for this podcast every once in a while.
There's a decent chance my son comes up here. In the middle of it, he is, long story. We'll see. I feel like there's a 70% chance that he pops onto this podcast. We'll see. At any rate,
I hope he does, because I feel like he's already made a cameo before on CBS Sports HQ. Yeah. And, the way you try to stiff arm your son was something similar to Desmond Howard, I think, when he struck a pose, for the Heisman. It was very similar to that.
That's my traditional pose. Sorry, I was taking a sip of afternoon coffee. We're going to dive. Today's Monday afternoon as we record this. So if anything breaks after the 4 o'clock hour, we'll circle back and talk about it on Tuesday. We'll record the Wednesday podcast after the franchise tag deadline to make sure we get all that stuff covered. Brady and I will talk some franchise tags. We will talk about me losing my voice at the NFL Combine. And, of course, we will talk about winners and losers from the NFL Combine. By the way, Brady, did you know that we did this podcast Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday? No breaks. No days off.
No days off. We're like the New England Patriots of podcasts, at least in the sense of our consistency, right? I don't know about as far as quality and Super Bowls wins and all that kind of thing, but at least in regards to consistency, yeah.
We're like the Browns being coached by Bill Belichick, like the modern day Browns being coached by Bill Belichick. You know, no days off, not a lot of wins, not Super Bowls, but no days off.
I'll take that.
Any rate, how would you like to break down the combine? Because I think it is a little too nebulous just to say who's your big winner, who's your big loser, right? I mean, I think. Actually, you know what? I know we talked about it ad nauseum this week, but I have a hard time starting anywhere else. You have to go to Kyler Murray, don't you? I mean, what did you think about Kyler Murray's quote unquote performance? As in he weighed in, saw his measurements, didn't throw, did do a press conference. It was, not bad. It wasn't terrible, but wasn't great. And then he came out of this combine with apparently two teams, and the Cardinals and the Raiders, coveting him. And what are you hearing about where Kyler Murray might end up going?
Well, I think the speculation that it could go to Arizona number one overall is, to me, twofold. Because, for starters, does it make sense as far as the scheme fit? Of course. And it would make a lot of sense that if that was the quarterback you were looking to pair with Cliff Kingsbury, that's the best situation and circumstance. He's a unique talent. It all makes sense. But it also makes sense, if you're the Arizona Cardinals, to waive that number one pick and make teams who might be valuing a potential quarterback like Kyler Murray to waive that around back and forth as much as you can and see what offers you could field either for Kyler Murray or for Josh Rosen. So it makes sense because at this point in time, you're really just gathering information as to what you could get in return for either one of those two scenarios. So that's kind of my overall thought on where we're at right now. But Kyler Murray kind of won the combine. If you look at the fact that he was taller than people thought based on his numbers at Oklahoma, he was heavier than people thought he was going to be, and he had bigger hand size than a guy like Drew Locke, for example, who Pete Prisco, mind you, loves. But he also has like 9-inch hands. If you look at Kyler Murray, he's got 9.5-inch hands. So even bigger hands than a bigger player like Drew Locke. So I think he won in that regard. Where I heard he didn't look very good, meetings. I heard he had a really hard time going through meetings with teams, drawing up defenses, talking X's and O's. And so that's going to hurt him, but it's also not going to keep a team from drafting him because, let's be honest, there's a lot of guys who struggle with that. Now, it is the most important position at the quarterback spot, and there are guys like Daniel Jones and – I'm sure Dwayne Haskins were much better prepared, but still, that's something that's going to be learned. And I think when he's not devoting half his time as a collegiate athlete to baseball, he's going to have even more time to devote it to football and be able to catch up with a lot of that.
Yeah, you know, you were not the only person I heard say that about Kyler Murray in those meetings. And that, I mean, that has to, that's a red flag. That's a major red flag, right? That, I mean, at the end of the day, isn't that the most important thing? I mean, does it matter if, I mean, it might not matter if the Cardinals decide they love him and they're ready to move on from Josh Rosen. And it might not matter if John Gruden is, I know, you know, Peter King has reported this, that John Gruden's in love, with the Raiders. He wrote that on Monday. In love with Kyler Murray. But if he stinks on the whiteboard, you know, I mean, like, I don't know. It feels like, do you think there's a chance that we've got so enamored with the idea of, you know, Russell Wilson working out and Baker Mayfield working out, and now it's Kyler Murray's got to work out? I mean, is there a chance that Kyler Murray isn't as good as his predecessor at Oklahoma?
They're completely different prospects, in my opinion. They ran the same offense, but, you know, when you're watching that offense, there's two distinct differences between Baker Mayfield and Kyler Murray and how they operate within that system. Baker Mayfield is the type of quarterback that moves to throw. Kyler Murray is the type of quarterback, when he moves in the pocket, it's to go. So move to throw versus move to go, and one translates a lot better at the NFL level than the other. And that's one of the reasons why you saw Baker Mayfield really excel. When he moved in the pocket, he moved on with his progression to 2 to 3, and he usually made those throws. He's a very accurate passer. Kyler Murray's not as accurate. He is still accurate and has enough arm to make all the throws, and can throw from all sorts of different, you know, funky body positions and angles because of his baseball background. But you didn't see him work through his progressions quite as much. Typically, it was more, if number one's not there, he's off to the races. If number two's not there, he's off to the races. Now, I will say this, though. He doesn't force stuff. He knows when there's only a three-man rush, when he has additional time in the pocket. And look, versus a lot of blitz zero looks like we saw from time to time when West Virginia would run them against them, he knows where to go with the football. So, I think he does have a strong understanding, at least in the previous system he was in at Lincoln, with Lincoln Riley, of where he's going with the football and what his plan is. But he's not the same prospect as Baker Mayfield. So I don't think you can really compare the two. And you can even use that as any sort of measuring stick as to how he will project as an NFL quarterback.
What about the other quarterbacks out there? Did you think that Dwayne Haskins helped himself? Did Drew Locke, I know you mentioned him, did he, you know, sort of fade back a little bit from the top two guys? Is there, you know, Daniel Jones, I don't know if he elevated it. Just, that felt like a very, at least their throwing and workout session. I know that it doesn't matter. And, you know, you've done it. So you know how it works in there and how it actually functions within the context of the draft process. But, you know, like compared to recent years, I wasn't blown away by anybody on that during that throwing session.
No. And that's one of the reasons why it's kind of irrelevant. You know, there's not a whole lot you're going to take away from it. There are a couple of guys who maybe aren't being talked about as much that I thought helped themselves, like Gardner Minshew, for example. He's the quarterback in this draft that most reminds me of Baker Mayfield. Minshew came out of Washington State. He was a grad transfer, went there for 1 year, was phenomenal in Mike Leach's air raid system, primarily playing shotgun, though. And at the combine, they make you drop back like you're under center. I thought he handled himself really, really well. His footwork looked solid. He got good depth. He threw on time, on rhythm, and he was accurate as all get out. And if you look at him as far as his size and weight and just watch him throw and look how accurate he is as a quarterback throwing the football on a lot of these, you know, a lot of the combine routes that they had, he reminded me a lot of Baker. So he was a guy who I think definitely helped himself. And you don't hear as many people talking about him. I can tell you this much. He's going to interview well. People are going to love this young man. I wouldn't be shocked if he doesn't get taken as a third-round pick, somewhere wow. Third, fourth, fifth round. I'll be shocked if he went later than that. I think he's a solid prospect who helped himself out a lot. Tyree Jackson's another guy that, you know, you look at his size at 6'7", 249, he's got a lot of raw talent and ability. Like, to me, upside, Cam Newton. That was the first guy when I started play and I saw him run and everything he was doing. That's what I feel like he could be and be the league MVP if he eventually gets more accurate as a passer, which is tough to do, but becomes more consistent. But also there's the caveat that he could become a Taysom Hill type player. You mix him in every once in a while to run some sort of package like that. And then there's always the possibility he could transition positions. You know, he could end up being a guy like Logan Thomas, who came out of Virginia Tech, that transitioned to a tight end and is now still playing in the league. Maybe that's there for you as well. So there are a couple guys who I think helped himself in that regard. And then you can look at a quarterback like Trace McSorley that got a little bit of flack because he wasn't overly accurate. He didn't didn't necessarily anticipate some of his throws during the course of the combine. And that, to me, is a product of the fact he's throwing to guys he hasn't thrown to before. And even though it wasn't a great showing, that's your downside risk. When you're a quarterback and you put yourself in that position and people are saying, oh, just get out there and compete. Well, then you come away with people knocking your ability to throw the football. And I didn't see that, you know, watching film of him this past year at Penn State. He throws a very good deep ball. I also feel like, especially in his half-field reads, he did a good job of throwing with the ball where it should be, accurately and on time. He wasn't late. So, you know, is he the most accurate quarterback? No. And I think this past year at Penn State revealed a little bit of that as teams took away some of the deeper shots and made him force him to be accurate in more of the intermediate routes. But there's a couple of things that you could easily fix within his footwork that would help make him more accurate when he throws at his pro day or in some private workouts. But, you know, those are just some of the guys that I was kind of watching and thinking to myself, it'll be interesting to see what narrative is spun after they're done, because the top guys looked how the top guys were going to look. I thought Drew Locke demonstrated a strong arm, a guy who could throw from kind of a variety of arm angles. But with the way he ran in the drills, he reminds me more of Jay Cutler than everyone kind of comparing to Matt Stafford. Mm. That's who I think he's more comparable to. You know, and Daniel Jones and Dwayne Haskins threw the ball kind of like I thought they would. I mean, they look like guys that could very well be taken in the first round.
Moving over to the wide receiver group. I got to tell you, now you'll be surprised by this, but you and I were texting back and forth when we were on CBS Sports HQ discussing wide receivers. And if you're not watching CBS Sports HQ, what the hell are you doing with your life? You can get real news, real sports news for real sports fans. We had 24/7 coverage of the combine. Ryan Wilson and John Breach are still there. They're there through Tuesday, banging out recaps and hits and all that. And, of course, Brady and myself and Pete Prisco and everybody else will be on there. But we were texting during back and forth. You were like, you know, it's a good comp for DK Metcalf is Terrell Owens. And I told Pete Prisco that you said that. He's like, wow, that's a smart comp by Brady. I was like, do you want me to tell Brady you called him smart? And he's like, no, don't do that. I'll get very mad. but DK Metcalf, one of the three or four biggest stars of this combine by far. He blew everything away athletically. There are concerns, and I would echo them that, you know, he didn't run the 20 yard shuttle very well, didn't run the three cone drill very well. So you have to worry about the lateral agility. But that dude's a freak and he's built like a D end and he runs it's crazy.
He's built like a brick house is what my dad would call it.
There you go.
He's stacked. There's no doubt about it. You're probably going to have to edit that out.
But I most certainly am.
The way I used it, so you probably won't have to.
You quoted your dad, so I think that
right,
I'm allowed to use
right.
it. Yeah.
I quoted Chopper Quinn, so I think that still works.
Your dad's nickname is Chopper?
Chopper, yeah, that's his nickname. And actually the best part is my dad calls everyone else Chopper. So it's a brilliant strategy because you never have to learn anyone else's name. Everyone knows your name. And so when you speak, if you said, hey, Chopper, and you're in a room with like four or five guys, they all listen to you because everyone thinks that, you know, maybe you're talking to them. So it's a strategy that he devised a while ago. And I think you just – more people should run with it. It makes complete sense.
Hold on. We can't get away from that quite yet. His nickname is Chopper, but he calls everybody else Chopper. And by that, is that how he got the nickname Chopper?
No. He was on a helicopter in Vietnam. Here's the best part is he tells a variety of stories as to how he got the nickname.
Okay.
So, you know, it's kind of almost a mystery. And, you know, depending on who he talks to when he tells the story, when people ask, you get a different version. So that's more of the mystery behind it. And then the fun part is the fact that, again, that's the nickname they call. So everyone calls him Chopper, and he calls everyone Chopper. And somehow it all works out. No one gets confused, of course, across the entire process.
It's incredible. At any rate, Chopper calls DK Metcalf a brick bleep house to get ahead of the second one. And, I mean, how high is DK Metcalf going to get drafted?
You know, I think there's some serious concerns, though, with his medical. For starters, you know, the neck, you don't know if that's going to prevent a team from taking him. Just remember back Mike Williams a couple of years ago, he had a similar neck injury. I wasn't a concern for the Chargers. They took him. Wasn't great his rookie year, but then his second year really balled out, showcased well. So I think that provides an example of a guy that there was some concerns, but it did take a team that I think was in the back end of the first round. It was like 24, 25, and they took Mike Williams. maybe even 27 or something like that. Maybe not that high, but obviously with some,
which Mike Williams,
the wide receiver out of Clemson.
No, he went top 10. Chargers.
Did he go top 10? Was he like 9 or something?
Yeah, because remember it was him, John Ross, and another wide receiver who hadn't worked out well. Who else went in the top 10? John Ross, Mike Williams, and
yeah, he was 7th that year, and no one in that draft was. So look, someone's going to take a chance on him because he's got that sort of ability. But there could be some reservations with teams based on their medical grade, because again, John Ross, Mike Williams,
Corey Davis,
the other wide receiver. Corey Davis, there you go. None of them really showed out their rookie year.
No, they had terrible rookie years.
Right. But, again, you know, Davis is a little bit better second year. Mike Williams, I think, had the best of all of them. And then John Ross is a little bit better, too, in his second year, even though the Bengals want to trade him now. So the point is there will be some reservations. We'll see how teams view the neck injury as far as their medical team goes. I think as far as how he tested, you know, he was off the charts in some ways, but you're right. The concern is the 5-10-5 or 20-yard shuttle, as it's known as, and the 3-cone, which really tests your change of direction. So here's the simple solution to that. Don't put him in a position where he has to make a bunch of change of direction routes, right? You don't allow him to have to worry about breaking his feet down. If this dude's going to be breaking down on a route, it's going to be a 20-yard dig. It's going to be a 18-yard comeback. It's going to be something deep downfield where you are so threatened by his size and speed to beat you vertically. You have to get in your back pedal. You have to turn and run. So it makes his inability to get in and out of cuts, as well as maybe a smaller wide receiver or someone who's more fleet of foot, it kind of negates that inability to do it. So anyway, I think you can work around that because he is so explosive and so dynamic. So I'm not too concerned with that. The other thing is, you know, everyone talks about his body fat and is he flexible and all that, his catch radius. I mean, the only thing on film that you could kind of notice, and I talked to his quarterback, Jordan Tamu, I think that's how you pronounce it, at Ole Miss. He said, you know, he can make the most ridiculous one-handed catches, but then he'd make those easy ones sometimes look hard. And so that's a bit of a concern, too, is his ability to catch the football consistently, which is, you know, between the way his body looks and the way he would catch the football at times and be able to separate vertically, that's where it reminded me of the comp of Terrell Owens. That maybe Terrell Owens doing sit-ups outside of his house and being absolutely shredded.
Yeah, I mean, I've never I'm of the opinion that 1.6% body fat it's too lean for me. You know, I don't think it's safe. I like to err on the side of caution in this particular instance and make sure that I'm, like, up around, like, 16%. Or maybe I'm probably, like, 30%. I don't know. What percent?
You're way higher. Whatever you think you are, add on about 5% more body fat.
Yeah, I'm probably, like, 25 or 30 right now. Maybe like in the
summer. But you run a little bit, right?
Yeah. I mean, I'm not all fat. Thanks. What do you think your BMI is?
My body mass index or my body fat? Your BMI is a different story.
Oh yeah, what's your body fat
percentage? Which is really irrelevant. Yeah, my body fat percentage, I'm probably around like 10 or 12 right now. I mean, look, he's not 1.6%. I don't care what, when you include your vital organs and everything else, there's fatty tissue around that throughout his body. He would have a hard time being less than really 3 or 4 if you went through like one of those, I don't know, it's a DEXA scan or whatever it is.
Yeah.
But, you know, bottom line is he's shredded. He doesn't have much fatty tissue at all. That's all good and fine. And so you start having cramping issues and everything else. And then also just, you know, is he going to be, you know, having nagging injuries throughout the course of his career in the NFL? That sometimes comes along with that. Either way, though, I'm not concerned. I think he could get, you know, drafted within the top 10 if you find a team that's really in need of a wide receiver. But there are some concerns you're going to have about his medical history, and then, you know, looking at his play on film. We had 7 games this past year, and like I said, there was a little bit of an inconsistency with his ability to get in and out of cuts and then catch the football. So that could be concerning for teams as well.
Yeah, no, for sure. But I think, and part of the problem too is like this wide receiver group, even with, you know, as good as DK Metcalf was, you know, there's a lot of other, you know, good wide receivers out there. My boy, Kelvin Harmon, who I thought might be a first rounder, probably fell out of the first round with a uninspiring combine performance, although his film's very good. N'Keal Harry had a nice week. You know, you had who's your boy from Notre Dame? Whose name I'm forgetting.
Well, I was going to say, everyone's raving about DK Metcalf. Miles Boykin actually had maybe one of the best combine performances in the past decade when you factor in size.
Yeah.
And you look at all the measurements. I mean, he was more explosive in his vertical. Was it a 4.33, but was it like a 4.42? Was heavier. I believe he was a little bit taller. I believe he was better in the three cones and all that stuff. I mean, he put together a performance. I don't know if he's a first-round guy, but he definitely went from being a guy that didn't have a lot of production during the course of his career at Notre Dame, being potentially a fourth, third, maybe even second-round pick with what he was able to do.
Yeah, he did a sub-7-second three-cone drill, was nearly right at 4 seconds in the 20-yard shuttle, 140 broad jump, 43.5 vertical jump, 12 bench reps, and a 4.4240. That is outstanding for a 6'4", 220-pound wide receiver. And yeah, I mean, I don't know. I thought that Paris Campbell out of Ohio State did a really good job. He had a 4.3 140. Andy Isabella did too. I just thought that this Akeem Butler out of Iowa State. This is a deep, deep wide receiver class. I don't know what the over under is going to end up being for number of wide receivers taken in the first round, but if it's 2.5, I would take the over. I think you're going to see 3 or 4 guys go in the first round because of the need of certain teams at the back end because of the depth of this position.
I always wonder how, you know, teams view taking a wide receiver in the first round versus signing one in free agency. I mean, you look at some of the guys who last year got signed in free agency. Michael Crabtree, for example, signs a 3-year deal with Baltimore. Has an okay year, not great. Everyone's stats went down when Lamar Jackson came in at quarterback. And he gets released after 1 year. You know, Golden Tate gets traded for and now becomes a free agent and hadn't heard much buzz. Or you would have thought that if you're Philly, you would have just leased him for the year. And I think in exchange of a third-round pick, you would have tried to extend him. They obviously didn't see enough to want to extend him, and they'll let him test the free agency market. So it's just kind of bizarre that the way NFL teams have handled some of it. And on the flip side, you got Amari Cooper, who traded for a first-round pick. You know, he's a guy that his contract expires after next year. But you wonder, are the Cowboys going to make him play through it and then look to franchise tag him? Depending on how he plays this next year, that might be the way they go about doing it. We'll have to wait and see. But, I mean, it'll be interesting. You know, whether a team wants to build the draft with a wide receiver like that or if they're going to look into free agency and maybe they can find someone on the cheap.
Yeah, and it's weird. The Cowboys were a big talk of the combine as well. I mean, it seems like, and we'll get to the franchise tags in a minute, but it does seem like they're going to try to pay everybody. But that was sort of their bluster thing, and maybe they won't. Pay everybody. I don't know. You know, like, you know, you always hear Jerry Jones like, Dak Prescott, we're going to give him like $600 million. And then it's like, well, why are you like, what's the holdup here? Pay him. If you're going to talk about paying him, then just pay him. The other group of guys that really stood out, I thought, in terms of having a big week, the defensive lineman who, Montez Sweat blew up everything. I talked about him yesterday with Ryan Wilson and John Breach, but who in your mind helped themselves from the defensive lineman group?
Well, I don't know about, you know, too many people help themselves. Look, Nick Bosa needed to showcase that he's healthy and he's still able to move really, really well. His 40 time wouldn't blow you away after you're watching Montez Sweat out of Mississippi State,
right. But
his 10-yard time was damn fast. And I think that was anywhere between 1.55 to 1.65 for a 10-yard split, which is what you're looking for out of a rush end or an edge player, right? You want the explosion off of the football to go get that quarterback. That's what a 10-yard demonstrates. I honestly wish they would just post that, you know, for most D linemen, since it's so important, and typically you have to really search and dig to find that. But him demonstrating that he's healthy, looked good in drills, ran pretty well, it showcased that. And I think he solidified himself as one of the top prospects. Josh Allen did the same. And then Quinn Williams, I thought he was the most impressive. And it's another reason why he's my top overall prospect. I don't know that there's a better can't miss product than Quinn Williams, based on, you know, being 300-plus pounds, running a 4.8 40, moving the way he does, and then mashing that with his production and the film that he had. 19 and a half tackles for loss, 8 sacks this year. I think, 91 tackles or something ridiculous like that. So he helped himself. You can talk about Montez Sweat all day. The cool thing about him is, look, if being an edge rusher doesn't work out, dude, go switch over to offense. Go, if you have any ball skills, go be a tight end. Go be a wide receiver. Like, he's got options for a lot of point in his career. So kind of interesting to see what happens with him. But, you know, there's a number of other players. I think there's some guys, too, that didn't help themselves. Was it Ja'Kai Polite?
Ja'Kai Polite, yeah. Very bad combine.
Yeah,
by the way,
a lot of people questioning whether or not the injury was that he claimed he had with the hamstring was actually legitimate. So that's always a good sign.
Yeah, Nick Bosa helpfully tweeted out by our friend Daniel Jeremiah, who also had a big breakout combine at Move the Sticks on Twitter. Nick Bosa tied for third in terms of defensive linemen with a 1.55 10-yard split. Montez Sweat at 1.50. And you're right. I mean, like, it would almost be better just to see guys, like, don't worry about running the full 40. You know, it shows that you're a freak athlete, but how about just run 20 yards, but let him, like, you know, do the 10 yards and then cool down. You know what I mean? Like how often?
Well, I think it's still good to see what their top end speed is.
Yeah.
It's impressive for how big they are, but just include the 10 yard split. Like, we should just have a sub or a dash where it's like 10 yard split, 40 yard dash time. It should be on the
player's tracker. Like, on the combine results, it should be all, like, 10-yard split should be on there. Because they show it on the TV. And so we need to know that. That would be a nice change. Ja'Kai Polite probably fell out of the first round with his combine. He's got, you know, a lot of upside. But when you're having these weird conversations with teams and people are questioning whether or not you actually got hurt and you're not performing well and you're supposed to be a freak athlete, that's never a good sign. Did you catch all the DB stuff? I know that you flew out on Friday, right? Did you fly out on Friday?
Yeah, I did fly out on Friday. I got to watch the quarterbacks back at home, which was nice. Got to catch a number of the DBs. You know, one guy stood out, at least from the safety position, Darnell Savage out of Maryland, ran a 4.39 unofficial when I was watching, but man, From looking at him
four three six official.
There you go. So even faster than what I had seen. But you know, that speed matches what you see on film. That speed and really the athleticism matches what you saw as a coverage player, a guy who blitzes very well off the edge too and plays well against the run. He's really the complete package. He was the guy that really stood out in that regard. I mean, look, the cornerback thing, Greedy Williams, he ran fast enough to solidify himself as a first round pick at cornerback. Even though there's a lot of reservations about, you know, is he going to stick his nose in the run game and be a physical player? That's really the only thing that I would be questioning, which isn't as big of a concern considering how many teams are going to more shotgun passing offenses throwing roughly about 60-some% of the time. So not as big of a reservation with that as most people have. So it's, you know, a number of guys stood out. I think what really stood out to me was how much better this draft is for defensive players than offensive players.
Yes.
With the exception of the wide receiver position, that was really the takeaway. Wide receiver and tight end, which tight end to me, it's like there's three at the top and then there's kind of everyone else. It's the Iowa boys, Fant and Hockenson and Irv Smith Jr. and then everyone else. And then you look at, you know, again, some of the wide receivers, we said there's a lot of depth there, a lot of talent. But outside of that, man, this is going to be a very, very much defensive heavy draft. So I'm kind of excited to see just how many guys will be taken on that side in general in the draft versus offense.
Yeah, I'm with you 100%. I think this is we're going to see it happen because it happens every year that there's a, like, you know, the economic aspect of this, there's a supply and demand of certain positions. There's some positional scarcity and teams who have a need at, like, wide receiver or have a need on offense will ultimately take offensive players earlier. Defensive players will slide down the board, and you're going to see teams, like, I think the Raiders are in such a good position this draft with 4, 24, and 27 that if they just, I mean, like, if you want to find one playmaker and two defensive players, you could come out of the first round with some serious talent. And I just think we're going to see a lot of, I don't know about blue chippers, but a lot of really good. We're going to be surprised by some of the picks that are going to be made in the middle of the second round. And like, man, how did that? Like, that guy fell that far. God, what a steal for this team, et cetera, et cetera. I just think this is a deeper draft, and it's so full of defensive players that you're going to see some of them get pushed down, and we'll be surprised by it. Let's take a.
I'll put it this way.
Yeah,
there's probably 50 guys who have, like, first round grades, and there's obviously only 32 picks. So
what?
You know, not everyone's going to be able to go in the. Do you get what I'm saying or no?
No, I there's only 32. No, yeah, I know. I'm with you. No,
yeah.
There's a big list of good guys.
That's one way of looking at it, you know, as far as grading this draft.
I'm with you. Sorry, I took a final sip of my coffee like a moron. Is there anything else you would add to the combine before we take a break? Like, anything else that's percolating around of that?
You know what's kind of lame?
What?
It was just everyone kind of knows Pride 47 now. It's played out.
Oh,
none of the coaches
great
and
point.
Really the general managers want to go as much. And it seems to be where all the media members now just want to hawk and hope that they, you know, can sit there like vultures and just find all these guys who walk in. And don't get me wrong, you still see the occasional coach and general manager there, but it's not what it once used to be. It's kind of sad. It's kind of sad that the media has absolutely ruined what was a fun place to go to see all the people who are going to be making decisions come free agency, come the NFL draft and all that in one spot.
Yeah, I'll say this. So you left on Friday. I left on Saturday, but I went down to Prime. You know, those of us who are cool enough to head up there a lot, call it Prime, you know, Prime 47, whatever you want to call it, Brady, you know. I was down there on Friday night, and there was a distinct, different flavor than there had been the first two nights at the combine. A lot more personnel people and scouts and GMs. John Elway and Howie Roseman were both down there, notably a lot of coaches. But I will say this, you know how when you walk in and, you know that table where David Kanter set up all weekend?
Sure.
Yeah, and then like across the banister is like sort of a little square dining area. They'd use that Tito's bar that the thing they roll out that they set up in the middle of the restaurant at night where it's like you can only get Tito's drinks. They'd use that as sort of a barricade to kind of create this elite little area where like the kind of the high rollers were hanging out. And so I'm with you 100%. I think that whether it's, I mean, do you think that the football community in terms of maybe the totality of the coaches and the GMs has gotten a little less aggressive? Or do you think they're just going other places because they know that, because it looked like on the first two nights, Wednesday and Thursday, it was 100% media in Prime hoping for coaches and GMs to show up there, and they never did. And so the media just got drunk in a bar together. And like, that's fine, but it kind of ruins the purpose of it, right?
Yeah. And I think that's not necessarily a product of, you know, whether the combine still is aggressive or these coaching staffs and front offices. I think it more has to do with how guarded the teams and coaches need to be with loose lips sometimes sink ships, right? And that's where I feel like we've gotten to a point where enough media members are so dying for a scoop and for something to write every single day that, you know, they're a little bit more hesitant to go out and potentially risk putting their plans out there publicly. Or there's some that are really calculated and they know exactly what they're telling the media members, so they're okay with it. So there's always two sides of, this, of how this kind of works.
Well, I mean, I'll say this too. Like, you know, I remember when I first started going to the combine and Pete Prisco would take us around. And like he got us, you know, like you didn't hear everybody talking. It was called Moe's back then. Prime was, but like he would get us down to Moe's, and it would be crowded. But you'd be like, what the hell? Like everybody from every team was there. And even as recently as like 2 years ago, we were talking about before we went down. But you know, you and I were hanging out with some members of the coaching, a coach and like some GM types at the bar, you know, and it did feel different this year. And maybe you're right. Maybe it has turned a corner. Do you want to talk really quickly about me losing my voice before we move on to the franchise tags?
Yeah, I mean, like this is the culmination of the week is you lost your voice. You sounded like garbage on CBS Sports HQ, largely because you stayed out too late and had a little bit too good of a time. But you know, you are a gamer in the sense that you still woke up every day, you came up to work, you had great information. The delivery wasn't quite there, but I do applaud you. I do applaud you for the effort.
Yeah, I mean, I would say that my one big mistake that I made during the week is that on Thursday, when I still had 2 days of video to do, I went out to dinner with some friends. We went to St. Elmo's, you know, had a nice meal, and then instead of going down to Prime, we went straight from Elmo's to Nicky Blaine's. And Nicky Blaine's is an underground cigar bar in Indianapolis. It's an awesome place. You can sit down there and drink some brown, smoke a cigar, listen to some Steely Dan. It was a really good time. But smoking a cigar before you have to talk for 6 hours for the next 2 days is just a stupid move, especially when you're yelling about various stuff and you're hanging out late. And so that was on me. It was an unforced error.
You know what? Forget everything I just said. I was totally on board to try to support you through all this. Yeah. Until you just made a giant excuse claiming a cigar is what did it to you. So forget I said anything about you toughing it out. You're a tremendous wuss. I'm disappointed that I just defended you. I really am.
I'm disappointed that you defended me too. All right, we're going to take a very quick break, and then we will wrap this up with some franchise tag talk.
The perfect combination of versatile athleisure and training apparel has arrived. Thanks to the visionary minds of New Balance, Clutch Athletics, and Rich Paul, the designs reflect the heart of the athlete and the spirit of the community. With rising defensive stars Will Anderson and Chase Young on the roster, Clutch Athletics brings the best innovative gear to all athletes, giving them style and performance on and off the field. Learn more and purchase Clutch Athletics at newbalance.com.
I'm Trey Wingo.
And I'm Kevin Frazier. We're teaming up on a new weekly sports podcast from Wondery, Alternate Routes.
As former SportsCenter anchors and current sports obsessives, we're consumed by all the what-if questions that make being a sports fan so excruciatingly fun.
If you're like us, then you also live and die on the fallout from every drop pass, busted draft pick, and game-changing play.
Or play call.
Intercepted at the goal line by Malcolm Butler.
Sorry, Marshawn, still too soon. Each week on Alternate Routes, we'll take a flashpoint in sports, break down what actually happened, then explore every alternate scenario and the ripple effects it would have caused.
Follow and listen to Alternate Routes on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen ad-free by joining Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.
I mean, the possibilities are limitless, Kevin.
What if Portland drafted Michael Jordan?
What if the NBA never vetoed the Chris Paul trade to the Lakers?
That's the butterfly effect for real.
Okay. Good news. My son hasn't busted in here. Bad news is my dog is barking at something. What could it be? Who knows? We'll find out. If you hear the dog, if you hear George barking, my apologies. If not, great. Franchise tags are due today. Today being Tuesday at 4 p.m. We have seen some tags handed out. Robbie Gould of the 49ers, the kicker, got tagged. And then Jadeveon Clowney got tagged as well. D Ford expected to be tagged. Jadeveon Clowney, of course, by the Texans. D Ford expected to be tagged by the Chiefs. And I expect that DeMarcus Lawrence will be tagged as well, as I've heard that he and the Cowboys are not close on a deal. It seems like there's going to be a lot. It's going to be the same guy. Like, you had a free agency class. It was defensive linemen. And you had a draft class of defensive linemen and the tag guys who are defensive linemen. A lot of focus on the edge rushers here. Are you surprised by any of the names you've heard for tagging?
No, because I think this is the second most expensive position outside of quarterback. And so it's hard to really come to an agreement or a deal when guys are making, I think, what's the tag number now for edge rushers? 19 million?
Yeah, no, it's actually only 17 million.
Or 17.
It's a steal.
Right.
Well, but you know what's dumb? They need to fix it. And I told you this to Joel Corey, but like the Von Miller, who's an outside linebacker, counts against
right.
the linebacker number. So
he counts as a linebacker.
Yeah. Like CJ.
And that's the interesting thing about Clowney is, you know, they actually gave him, you know, based on this past year's performance, they actually gave him like a $1 million kind of bonus in order to, I think for his fifth year option.
Yeah.
In order to kind of offset that because, you know, of how they use them and all that. But in tagging Clowney, instead of making the $17 million, he's going to make like $15.5 or something like that.
Yeah.
So there's definitely a flaw. I'm sure the NFLPA would like to figure out a solution for that in the next CBA, but kind of is what it is for right now. I think the bottom line is like you're saying it's a bargain, but the truth of the matter is it's still a really expensive number when
sure.
you look at it in the context of the other positions that are up there for you know for the franchise tag. So I think teams are look. There's no doubt they want to continue to you know build on their roster with these edge rushers and all that. But the franchise tag was not designed to keep quarterbacks, not necessarily for teams to be able to keep their franchise DNs. And every year as the Montez Sweats and the Rashawn Garys and Nick Bosa's and Josh Allen's come out, these other edge guys, it makes it that much harder and harder for teams to want to invest long-term money into these positions. So I'm not surprised they came to an agreement on the tag. Jadeveon Clowney is an interesting you know guy to evaluate because he's never hit double-digit sacks in his career. And even going back to his time coming out of high school, he's kind of similar to Rashawn Gary. Like one of the number one recruits coming out of high school in South Carolina, flashed ability his sophomore year, junior year, didn't do crap because of that big hit versus the Michigan Wolverines in the bowl game the year before, put him on the map.
Yep.
He kind of packed it in. And then since then, he's battled some injuries, but he's just never really played to his capability. And so now if you're the Texans, you're damned if you do, you're damned if you don't. And so they tag him for now, trying to figure out if they can find a long-term solution. But I wouldn't be shocked if he didn't play out this year under the tag, and this ends up being his last year as a Houston Texan.
Yeah, I think there's a good chance of that. At the very least, you know, I mean, his numbers haven't been what you sort of expect based on where he was drafted and the hype around that Michigan hit. But he has, you know, look, he's been very good against the run. I think he's probably a surprisingly underrated player at this point in time. You know, I mean, having said all that, I wouldn't be surprised at all if, you know, if this is a guy who ends up hitting free agency or even gets tagged and traded. I know Jason Lockenfora wrote about that for CBSSports.com. What do you think about the idea of some trade rumors? Josh Rosen? What do you think? Can Josh Rosen be traded? Is that out of the question?
I think he can be. It just depends what the offer is going to be. And the fact that the Arizona Cardinals paid a large portion of what's owed to him under his rookie deal makes him more tradable. The fact that he's got some seasoning in the NFL makes him more tradable. And look, I'm sure other teams had a first-round grade on him besides the Arizona Cardinals. And so if you're a quarterback needy team like the Washington Redskins and you'd be willing to give up some, you know, a second round pick in exchange for a guy who's got first round talent, why wouldn't you? You know, and he can come in and, you know, you can see what he is in Jay Gruden's system, which I think would be a good fit. And, you know, maybe he ends up being the guy in Washington if Alex Smith can't come back, or even if he can, you know, maybe he ends up still being the guy in the future. So I could see him getting traded. I see him not getting traded. I could also see them saying, look, we're going to take Kyler Murray. We've got Josh Rosen. What's the need of needing to trade either one of these guys? Like, there's some concern about taking Kyler Murray, right? There's a chance he might want to go back to baseball. Now, if he's drafted number one overall, he'd be making a ton of money in basically a fully guaranteed contract with the Cardinals. And it would be tough for the Oakland Athletics to then offer him something that would force him to want to go to baseball instead, which it's always out there, right? The hard part for any Major League Baseball team is if they do offer him over whatever the amount is, I can't think of off the top of my head, they have to bring him up to the 40-man roster.
Oh, yeah.
Are you willing to do that in order to bring in a kid that you're not sure will ever be able to play at the level of a Major League Baseball player? So if that's the case and you want to take this risk on Kyler Murray, why not have both? See how the rookie year goes. Let the best man win. If he wins, great. You know, you can deal Rosen after the season. There'll still be a trade market for him. And if not, maybe Rosen's the guy. And then Kyler Murray is either kind of waiting in the wings to get in, or maybe he just decides to say, screw it, I'm going to go to baseball. So there's also a chance that you could trade Rosen, that you might not draft Kyler Murray, or maybe both guys end up on the roster.
Well, here's the thing, too. Josh Rosen, they paid out most of his money because, you know, you have that signing bonus, right? He had a $10.8 million signing bonus. You know, and then you're giving him – I think they paid out $16 million maybe they paid out like $12 million of his deal already. Whatever it is, the Cardinals have paid Josh Rosen a ton of money already. When you look at what he's owed left on his deal, it's like $8 million over 4 years. So if you're somebody who's interested in trading for Josh Rosen, I have to turn the volume down on my big telephone, Daddy's big telephone. Did you hear that exchange, by the way? Could you hear any of that?
I did not.
Oh, wow. Okay. All right. There's a whole telephone exchange followed by a dog who's now plotting to destroy my entire office. You're doing remarkably well for someone with a small child, by the way. Don't hear a peep out of you.
I try to hit the mute button quite often. You know, whatever I'm feeding her, she starts getting fussy. And then I just try to be really short as I can at times when I know she's about to get fussy.
Well, you're a pro, Brady. I'm not. I'm just being steamrolled by a child and a dog here. At any rate, no, I mean, like, I think if you're a team that wants to, that money amount coupled with Josh Rosen's pedigree, coupled with the idea that there's always at some point throughout the season a need for a quarterback via trade. If I'm the Cardinals, I'll go out there and float ideas about, you know, taking Kyler Murray and trading Josh Rosen. I'm not just dumping Josh Rosen for a third round pick. I'm not dumping him for a second round pick. If the Dolphins or the Redskins want to give me 13 or 15, or if, you know, even, I mean, maybe, I don't know if you can do it with the Raiders for like 24. They probably won't do it anyway because they could have got him at 10 last year. But I'm not opposed to making that trade for a first round pick. I'm not going to do it for a third round pick. I'll just ride out. I like your idea. Ride out both quarterbacks. See if Kyler Murray's got it. And if he does have it, maybe you can trade Josh Rosen when an injury pops up for another team or at some point, elsewhere in the draft. You don't have to do it right now. And it gives you a safety net. I don't think those two guys would get along in a quarterback room necessarily. But hey, you know what? I mean, it worked out fine in Green Bay. It worked out fine in San Diego, now Los Angeles with the Chargers. And, it wasn't always pretty, but you can make it work if you have to. How about?
Yeah, go ahead. And here's the truth is behind that offensive line, they might both have to play anyway.
Uh-huh.
So, we'll see how this year goes with the Arizona Cardinals and what they decide to do. I'm still betting they are bluffing and that they're going to take a different position or trade out of it if they get the right offer. But I don't know if that offer is going to come, at least not based on some of what we talked about in regards to the reservations with Kyler Murray's football IQ and some of the bad interviews.
All right, interesting. One last thing. What about the idea of trading Ryan Tannehill? That buzz started to build on Monday afternoon that the Dolphins are engaging in the early stages of a Ryan Tannehill deal. Do you believe that the Dolphins will be able to trade Ryan Tannehill, who has heretofore not been great, and actually has sort of a terrible contract, $26 million cap hit this year, $25 million cap hit next year. He's very cuttable, but not a great cap hit there.
Yeah, they'll be able to trade him if they can restructure the contract.
Right.
And that's going to be what this trade is contingent upon, that and obviously compensation. But, you know, the interesting thing is, you know, if you cut Ryan Tannehill and he goes sign elsewhere, I mean, there's always that kind of third round compensatory pick that you would potentially have on the table, if I'm not mistaken.
Mm-hmm.
So if that's there for you, I mean, it's gotta be a pretty darn good offer. And I don't know that he's going to be fielding something better, that much better than that. So I guess we'll have to wait and see what comes from it.
You can't cut him. If you cut him, you're not getting a comp pick. He has to walk as like a completely unrestricted free agent. So like Michael Crabtree, you know, cut by the Ravens won't count into the comp pick formula, what's wrong with me today? Who's the receiver? John Brown, who walked. So like the Dolphins can ride out Ryan Tannehill for two more years and then let him walk and potentially get the comp pick. If they cut him, they save $13 million in cap space. If they trade him, you know, that's
a post June 1st designation, right?
No. They save $13 million anyway. Because his dead cap number is only $13.4 million. If he's post June, they save $19 million. But $5.5 million would be on next year's cap. I just don't know
right. Who's
going to trade him and take that cap hit on.
I'm not sure who would either. Right,
yeah.
And that's part of it. And then also, I mean, what are you trading for? Are you trading for a Ryan Tannehill you're expecting to come in and be your starter? Is it like the Washington Redskins? I don't even know if they have enough cap space
exactly.
to absorb something like that. But the other question becomes, again, his injury history, he's got a bad knee, and then what are you trading for? I mean, are you really going to pay him that much and not have him be the guy? He's got to be the guy. Otherwise, you're looking at him saying, well, he's a really highly paid backup. He's maybe, you know, holding down the job until a rookie that we draft is going to take over. So, and again, you've got other more economical options, Blake Bortles, Teddy Bridgewater, maybe Case Keenum. There's other guys who are going to be potentially out there via either in the trade market if they're under contract or free agency. So that's always a possibility too. And I think that's going to drive the trade compensation for Ryan Tannehill down. Or just ultimately force the Dolphins into, you know, having to release him. Unless they, again, renegotiate this contract. And Tannehill's willing to play for a lot less.
All right. I think that's it. That's all we got for this show. Good stuff. Did I miss something? I could have missed something.
Do we have any fun conversations when we were in Indy? I feel like we really didn't have a ton of fun.
Well, we didn't, but that's because Pete was around. And Pete was sort of
I don't know if it was so much on Pete. I mean, it could have been for other reasons, right? Like maybe I'm not really sure what to chalk it up to. Look, we had a good time, though. I'll say that much.
I had fun.
Oh, yeah. Chick-fil-A. Did you know I'm such a big fan of
Chick-fil-A? Oh, my God, you're Chick-fil-A. Yes, I forgot about this. This was you were completely – people were floored by this, and you were completely unfazed and borderline surprised that people, were shocked when you ate – and I'm not kidding – three chicken sandwiches, three number ones – you know, plain the regular fried chicken on the bun in the bag with the pickles on it. I believe you took the pickles off, but you ate three in the span of 15 minutes.
Not really sure. It was probably like 6 minutes.
It was probably like
I'm
6 minutes.
I'm still not really sure what the fascination is with eating that fast. One, you guys have had to have seen people who eat that fast before. And I don't really get it. I'm not really sure why, everyone's so fascinated by it. I was really hungry. There were leftovers. I typically don't eat that kind of crap, but it wasn't really a better option because of our schedule. So I housed through those last three, and then I moved forward with my life. That's pretty much it.
I got to tell you, you know, it's a little surprising. I just looked this up real quick. I don't think it's surprising. I mean, I guess I would have expected it. Like those three each Chick-fil-A sandwich, an original Chick-fil-A sandwich, has 440 calories. It's not even that, it's not bad. Like it's, you know, if you add, the fries, you've got 840 calories. 440 is nothing. 440 is like,
no.
Like if you get, it's like two servings of Cheez-Its. I mean, it's nothing.
I had three sandwiches, right? So I'm already over, like, I'm in the 1300 calories at that point.
Yeah. But I mean, like, did you work out while you were at the combine at all? I didn't.
I did. Yeah. I did work out.
Yeah. Right. I mean,
we know you did. You were having a good time out there.
Yeah. I mean, you weren't not having a good time, right? Did you have a good time?
No, I was having a good time. I was working a lot, though. I was working a lot.
So. Yeah. You know, I noticed that with the Super Bowl, too. And at least from my perspective, I don't think I had as much fun as I used to back in the day. Like our work, maybe I'm older. Maybe I'm a harder worker. Maybe I care more. Maybe it's the podcast. I don't know, but there's a lot of work being done on these work trips these days. And I'm not sure how I feel about it, Brady.
It's too much work. Not enough play. No, I'm just kidding. None of it's work, man. This is all fun. It's fun hanging out with you guys. We got a great group at CBS. That was one thing that I came away by, happy about. It's a great group of guys to be at the combine with and just kind of throw ideas with and listen to how everyone rags on each other. Yeah. But most importantly, how everyone gangs up on Prisco. That's really the fun part of it all.
Prisco's an alien, as Jamie Eisenberg pointed out. He's an alien sent here to harass normal human beings walking around on this planet. And, that's fine. You know, that's just who he is. It's a freak of nature from outer space. It's not a big deal.
He's so funny. He really is.
You know, he put me on trial on Friday night. I'll explain it to you later. It's a whole thing. But he spent like an entire dinner like pretending like I was a defendant, and then he ended up deciding that I was guilty of treason. So got that going for you. Brady Quinn, always a pleasure to talk to you. We will have you back on next week free agency starts next week. This league year is firing up. Have a great week, man.
You too, bro. Look forward to talking next week.